The 520th edition of the MMA Gambling Podcast on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network is brought to you by Cut. Cut is a peer-to-peer social betting platform that's U.S.-based and available in 40 states. Head on over to Cut.com, that's K-U-T-T.com, and use promo code SGPN for a 10% deposit bonus. We're also brought to you by Underdog Fantasy. Play their fantasy pick'em for a chance to win 100 times your entry in NBA, NHL, college basketball, and more. Sign up today using promo code SGPN and get a 100% deposit match. And next, we're brought to you by Champs. Run your own March Madness pool and enter Champs' free bracket contest for a chance to win $1,000. Go to sportsgamblingpodcast.com/champs to enter today. And finally, we're brought to you by Hall of Fame Bets, the sports betting research platform for parlays, player props, and game lines. Download the Hall of Fame Bets app or visit hofbets.com and use promo code SGPN to get 50% off your first month and start making smarter bets today.
Hi ho, Degenerinos, and welcome to episode 520 of the MMA Gambling Podcast and the Sports Gambling Podcast Network. This episode is not being dedicated to Joanne Wood because she, Joanne Collar Woodwood, because she cost me another week against Gumby. Her win in the opening bout was the one bout that swung the night in Gumby's favor. Plus, she lost one of our friends in the Discord. Her win was the lone blemish on a huge parlay that you had. So good riddance, Joanne Wood. Just kidding. Now, thank you for coming to the show. I'm one of your hosts, Jeff Chalks Fox. I'm not saying good riddance because she'll be back. We all know that. Thank you for coming to the show. What an event it was last night, UFC 299. An exciting event. Just good fights all around. We will break them down quickly. And we did damn good with our picks. 10-4, both of us on our overall picks. We actually hit some of our fancy picks as well. It was a good night was had by all, I think. I was just in and out of the Discord. Maybe it wasn't a good night for some people in there. Maybe Gumby will know. Let's bring him in now. It's Daniel Gumby Vreeland. Hello.
It seemed like a good night just because Michelle Pereira won by submission. I think that was enough to give everybody a good night. It would have been much better if Michael Fenton Page stepped on the gas and gave us the full Hungry Man there. But, if you played the pieces of the Hungry Man on their own, 6-1 never hurts. So, between that and Joanne Wood, which I know did bum some people out, but also Ryan H, who's still in, I believe he's in one of his last 2 days of purgatory.
Oh my God. What did he do to deserve this?
I don't know. He's still in lockdown though. He's watching tons of regional MMA though while he's there. We were just talking about Fury before we started recording.
Yeah.
So he's almost free. You guys will see him soon enough. He'll be free just in time for an honorary Armenian guy to fight this weekend. He had a big parlay that involved Joanne Wood, so he was in a good mood.
Oh, that's good. Good. Well, that's good because he deserves some good news being stuck in purgatory forever, being restricted to just talk to Gumby and no one else. That's gotta be rough. Gotta be rough. Yeah, quite an event though, right? Pretty fun all around. Not just because we both hit 10 out of 14 fights, correct? But it was pretty interesting and meaningful fights all around.
Yeah, and here's the weird part about it too, and this is kind of like jumping the gun on like four different recaps, but maybe we can, maybe he'll speed things up a little bit.
Exactly.
Episodes are 6 hours long. The weirdest part for me is I went in with these prospects in my mind, right? Who all of them had this opportunity to take a step forward. It ultimately didn't work out for the vast majority of them, right? Song Yadong didn't get a chance to step forward against Piotr Jan, or got it turned away, rather. You got Jelton, who slipped up and made a mistake against Curtis Blaydes. You got BSD, who slipped up and made a mistake against Dustin Poirier. And then the lone sort of bright spot was JDM was able to put away Gilbert Burns. But the wildest part about this, and this is the like fun little spin I'm going to put on all of this, perhaps the most disappointing performance of those four might have been JDM. The only guy of those four big prospects to like sort of beat their divisional gatekeeper and like take a step forward was the guy who looked the worst, right? Because BSD won the first, right? Like he beat Dustin Poirier
really
in the
good.
First. Yeah, and he was beating really the hell out of him. And then, I've seen a bunch of different people's theories on it, but like I sort of think his biggest issue just was like his chin is always held up and he's just never fought a boxer like Dustin Poirier. So he doesn't know what a guy like that hits like. And then Jelton tossed Curtis Blaydes around like he was a rag doll for most of that fight. You know, Song Yadong came out and won convincingly round one. The only one who hadn't won any rounds was the one who won, you know, and it's kind of crazy, but like he'll be the one taking the step forward. And those other guys who showed wild promise against big steps up in competition all kind of now have to go back to the drawing board and beat another guy who's probably, you know, in the 10 to 15 range of their divisions.
I look like a ghost again. Don't I? I'm kind of glowing. You're kind of glowing as well. People watching on YouTube, they'll see what I'm talking about. Oh, I just got, I say that and it gets darker. So
there you go.
Yeah. Yeah. So fun event. We shall recap it. What I want to know is how did the guy from Home Alone 2 get cage-side seats right beside Dana White? Like he doesn't even have a talking role in that movie.
Do you mean, I was trying to remember who's the guy who plays the butler and also the clown from It.
I was going to make that joke,
but then I forgot his name.
No, it was. I don't know. It was a guy. I just know him from Home Alone 2. And I think he might have had another reality show, maybe. But I don't know. I don't think he's A-list. But anyhow, he was cage side. Everyone seemed to be talking to him too. So I don't know what the deal is with that. But other than that, pretty fun event. He was one of the how many people were in attendance? It was a packed Kaseya Center. 19,165 people were there. They paid over $14 million. People will. You build a good fight card, people will come. Florida seems to be a hotbed now for the UFC from the pandemic era onwards. Let's start in the main event. Sean O'Malley is just as good as he claims to be, which was good to see because we were both in on O'Malley minus 275. We weren't crazy about the number, but hey, we picked a winner on that one. Just too quick, footwork just too good, boxing just too good. Chito Vera, just too much Chito Vera. Like he fought the way that he always fights. And even his coach, it seems like Jason Perillo, his coach knew not to even try to talk him out of it. Cause we know you're going to give away, you know, he pretty much alluded that he's going to give away the first few rounds and that's what he did, but I don't know what else he could have done really. He did better when he put his foot on the gas, but I don't think he was going to win that fight unless he, you know, caught O'Malley with more than one shot. He did catch him a few times, but he wasn't able to follow up.
Yeah. So first of all, the most important thing is it was Tim Curry. That's the name of the butler in the clown.
Right. Yes.
That's, you know, getting you guys the real important information. And second of all, like we talked about this on Thursday, right? Like it is Chito Vera is the same guy who beat Sean O'Malley all those years ago. He hasn't changed for the most part. He's going to stand in front of you. He's going to slug. He's going to be a little bit slower than you. Sean O'Malley's different now. Sean O'Malley's angles are exceptional. He's deceptive. He draws you into shit. The way he kept drawing Chito into some of those knees. Dude, I don't know how Chito took those knees. I had Sean O'Malley. I had the round total on the under as my prop of the week. I feel like I was dead on in that analysis. I can't believe I just wasn't dead on in my analysis of Cheeto's chin because like that dude took enough beating to get out of there underneath 4.5. So the way he kept drawing him into things and stuff like that, Sean O'Malley has evolved. Chito Vera is kind of the same guy. And as a result, like you're going to keep seeing Chito get beat in kind of these like step him up fights. And Sean O'Malley is the perfect kind of guy to turn him away.
Yep. Yeah. Very impressive performance all around for Sean O'Malley. Like we said, he may look and act like a clown, but he definitely is not. He's very serious about his craft and serious with constantly improving, which is what he has done. But it was good. I don't want to hear all this talk about, oh, he's the next Conor McGregor. Good. No, there is no next Conor McGregor. Most of the world does not know who Sean O'Malley is. I don't see him. He doesn't really have that personality. He doesn't have that magnetic personality that draws people in.
I'm going to disagree.
The guy from
Home
Alone has it though. The guy from Home Alone 2 does.
I'm going to disagree a little bit. I do think Sean O'Malley has that kind of star power. The difference being just is it's not guided towards our demographic. So okay. Remember when Sean?
Thank you for grouping yourself in with an old person.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a little younger, but like you remember when Conor McGregor was coming up, right? And he was instant superstardom, and whether or not it was like geared towards me, you know, like I buy into that like hype and smack talk. That's obviously not my scene when it comes to MMA, but like 25-year-old guys, or however old I was when that was happening, 25-year-old guys that I knew were super into that. Now I'm 34, and you're a little older than that. And,
a little older. Yes.
And what Sean O'Malley is it for us? You know what I mean? Like, his marketing team is not trying to figure out how the Jeff Foxes of the world can love him more. And
really?
Then this is what he decided on. Like, he's there for the Twitch generation. He's there for the streamers and the people who watch. I mean, I don't even know what a Nelk boy is, but whatever the hell a Nelk boy is.
was that the guy in the front row? Was that a Nelk boy in the front row?
I don't think so, but I think he does the same thing. I don't. This is my point, though. He's not for us. And that's why I think, like, I mean, like, just look at his Instagram following. I think it's like 8 million or something like that. He has the people behind him. It's just like, it's not casual people who I see walking down the street who know me, who are like, hey, did you catch the Sean O'Malley fight? Like, that was happening with Conor McGregor because it was geared towards our demographics. Yeah. And I just think Sean O'Malley's for like a younger, I don't know if cooler is the right word, but probably cooler.
No, we're cool, dude. They can't be cooler than us, man.
Yeah, but I think he's marketable is my point. In whether or not Dana White will ever truly know how to market that or not, I sort of up in the air, but he does a good enough job marketing himself.
Yeah. No, the UFC does not market people. Conor McGregor got over because of himself, not because of the UFC. So anyhow, we don't really care about that stuff really on this show, as Gumby alluded to. We care about the actual fighting in there. He called out Ilia Topuria, which
I don't care.
We love when fighters want to go up a weight class immediately after having, like, well, at least he got one title at defense. Usually it's immediate after they win the belt, they want to go up. Ilya turned him down already and said, beat Merab first. So that's good.
It's kind of nice that there is a countryman just like waiting one division up to be like, nah, I don't think so. go back down and fight my guy. And really, here's the other problem I have with that. He's got lots of challengers in that division who still make sense too. You know, like, not just Merab, but like Corey Sanhagen's right there. Like, you still gotta get Corey Sanhagen. Umar Nurmagomedov will probably have picked up a win, or will at least have fought Corey Sanhagen by the time Merab gets a shot. So like, there's another contender right there. So like, he's got plenty of contenders. Let's let him get through a couple of those and then talk about him moving up. Cause I also think Ilia Topuria just absolutely demolishes him. Like, yeah. That's not a fight to me. And I was here tooting Sean O'Malley's horn a second ago. I don't think it goes well. I don't think it goes well.
His clown horn, his nose, honk, honk.
Did you catch the opening odds? I don't think we're sponsored by a sports book.
I don't think we are this week, so go ahead.
Just in case we are. BetOnline set out their opening odds for the Sean O'Malley versus Merab Dvalishvili fight, should it happen. Okay. What do you think they lined up?
Oh, yeah. I know you're going to ask me, and I already took a deep breath. Close to a pick 'em. I'm saying O'Malley minus 120.
Merab minus 125.
Okay.
Yeah. So just on the opposite,
I don't know what to do with that fight.
Yeah. I mean, like, on one hand, he goaded Aljamain Sterling into taking an absolute bomb. On the other hand, I don't know if Merab gets knocked out. I don't know if it's possible. Because that maniac just keeps going no matter who hits him hard. Although he's hittable. And that's the other fun part.
Yeah. He does get hit a lot. Yeah. Interesting. All right. Before I move on, I got to tell you about Cut. I'm a few minutes late, but I'm going to tell you about Cut. Cut is a peer-to-peer social betting platform that's US-based and available in 40 states. Peer-to-peer social betting is a new and better way to bet directly against your friends or other users in sports, politics, pop culture, and other events with verifiable outcomes and tons of fun social features that give it the feel of a betting social network. Cut offers lower vig and fully customizable odds. Create your own bets. Cut handles the payment side of things, so you never have to chase anyone down for money. Social features include group chats, betting leaderboards, head-to-head history, user profiles, fan groups, and more. And the rewards are you get cash back every single time you bet against your friends or other users. It's not available in Canada. I can't tell you a bet that I like, but I do like that our bosses and coworkers put up like personal type bets you can bet on, like rivalry bets, who's going to get the most picks correct this week, that type of thing. So download Cut for yourself today and find out in the App Store or over at KUTT.com. That's KUTT.com. Use promo code SGPN for 10% deposit bonus. If you want more bonuses and deposit bonuses and whatnot, Underdog Fantasy is the place for you to go. It's the easiest place to play fantasy sports. It's also the fastest growing fantasy app in the industry. Pretty simple. If you haven't read the articles Gumby and I write every night for NBA, we're on Underdog, checking out their odds every day for that. But if you haven't checked those out, all you got to do is pick between two and five players. Then you basically, you pick higher or lower on the various stat totals listed. It could be points, like we're talking basketball points, rebounds, assists, steals, first quarter points, a whole bunch of stuff like that. You pick higher or lower. If you get enough of them correct, you can win 100 times your money in a single night. Fantastic, right? Fantastic. Sign up today with promo code MMASGPN and get your first deposit doubled up to $100, as well as an instant pick'em special. Visit underdogfantasy.com or find them in the app store. Don't forget to register with Gumby and my promo code MMASGPN. Get your first deposit doubled up to $100, as well as an instant pick'em special. You must be 18 or older and present in the state where Underdog Fantasy operates. It does operate in Ontario, so I'm happy about that. Terms apply. Concerned with your play, call 1-800-522-4700 or visit www.ncpgambling.org. And I assume Gumby only puts winners in his Underdog article like I do. Nothing but winners, right?
That's right. Winner after winner after winner.
Marlin with the hair, not good, because he doesn't look like Marc Gasol anymore, right? He was shrunk down. He Marlon growing his hair out, Marc Gasol vibes. He was like a mini me Marc Gasol, and now he's not really.
That's a throwback, Marc Gasol. There you go.
That's true. Former Toronto Raptor, champion Toronto Raptor. Plus, I think long hair actually did him disservice, because his hair was flying around when he was getting hit last night. I think that could sway judges, because you really see.
I don't think there was any swaying the judges the other way last night. Like, none of those rounds were competitive.
the knee to your face, it sounds like a baseball bat. I guess that doesn't help your chances, does it?
No.
All right. Anyhow, good fighter regardless. Just didn't get it done. This was a very good fight, but it did not go our way, sadly. Co-main event, we weren't happy about the odds. We were happy our boy BSD was getting a chance, but wasn't happy about the odds. And Dustin Poirier was basically having it fed to him, his lunch, whatever, his dinner. It was not going well for him. BSD was feeding him croissants, perhaps, force feeding him. And then Poirier caught him once earlier on. I'm like, uh-oh. And you could tell it kind of rocked BSD. I'm like, okay, that's not a good idea. And then he really caught him second round, 232 in. So halfway into the second round, he knocked him out with punches. Basically, one shot pretty much ended it. And then you finished him up. And Poirier, a big underdog, which we were, kind of skeptical about him being an underdog to begin with. But anyhow, he slammed the brakes on the BSD hype train for the time being.
Yeah. And I kind of mentioned it off the top, so we don't have to belabor the point. But like, he very clearly needs to polish up his striking defense, because he went in there with Olajuwon Zaleski Dos Santos all those years back when he made his debut, took an absolute beating and just kept going. So he probably had the intuition that nobody at 55 is ever going to stop me. I might as well put my foot on the gas and let him try.
Nobody has.
And it's looked great all this time. And also, like, he had never had to worry about somebody surviving his onslaught, because nobody was surviving any of his onslaught. So Poirier did a great job, other than jumping guillotine 31 times.
Oh god, and I forgot about that. That's the best part. What's Heavy Hands? They're talking about that. He's gonna jump gilly. He's never successfully landed a guillotine choke.
What is he doing?
Of course, Daniel Cormier is claiming it's his best submission, or Rogan would claim it was his best submission. And then luckily,
he's got none of it.
Yeah. luckily, Mr. Why am I blanking on his name? Anik brought to their attention. He's never finished anyone with that submission, but yeah, it was close a couple times, but anyhow, yeah, he was jumping gilly, but it was his power.
Another reason for BSD to have confidence, though, right? He keeps going to this choke and I can keep getting out of it. So, like, why not keep just pushing forward and tempting him to do it, or tempting him to do this, or tempting him to do that? And he got stung. So maybe this is a great learning point for BSD. He learns that, like, up at this, echelon of the division, he's got to be a little bit sharper defensively, a little bit more conservative. You know, we talked about, Jack Dalla Maddalena sort of learning that lesson along the way, too, that he's got to be a little bit less risky against the Neil Magnys and the step ups in the division. And BSD kind of never had that stop. He went from Favola to to Poirier. So he never got that chance to kind of learn that lesson. So maybe this is a great one for him. As far as Poirier goes, man, I don't know how to book this guy anymore, because
that was my next question. What are we doing with him?
he turned away a prospect. So you have to imagine they're going to give him somebody bigger and better than that afterwards. Yeah. And sort of the problem is who's that? Because he doesn't deserve a title shot. I know he just called for one on Twitter, but he got knocked out by Gaethje, who still hasn't gotten his title shot yet.
Yep.
So, I mean, like,
it doesn't mean anything though, you know, people jump lines constantly, but
yeah. And that's the other thing is that Armin Sarukian with a win over Charlie Oliveira come UFC 300, he very clearly could jump the line too. And if that's the case, then like, you know, what's Gaethje's incentive to fight Poirier again? And we're back at this point where Poirier's in like a weird limbo and doesn't fight anybody forever.
Well, let's have him fight the winner of Gaethje Holloway, because that would be a banger fight.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about Gaethje Holloway, too. Yeah, I mean, like, here's the other thing I would do. I'd probably give the winner of Gaethje Holloway. I'd probably give him to Islam.
Right, yeah, that's true.
Unless Sarukian runs through him.
I meant Oliveira Armin. That's the fight. The winner of that fight. That's what I meant to say. Yes.
Yeah, Armin Sarukian would be a really nice fight for him. I'm also going to throw out my conspiracy theory Dustin Poirier fight for next. Are you ready for this?
Conor McGregor?
McGregor, man. Fine. Yep. I think give me International Fight Week or right thereafter. I think they just toss Michael Chandler aside like 3-week-old milk and put Dustin Poirier in there. And we call it a trilogy fight now at this point, or a quadrilogy fight, or whatever we want to call it. I think it sells better than Chandler versus Conor. And if, you know, Dustin's just sitting there waiting for a payday because he can't get a title shot, he could do a lot worse than beating up Conor McGregor for a third time.
How about Matias Gamrot, the other lightweight winner last night who took care of Rafael Dos Anjos, 29-28, 29-28, 30-27. I don't see any upside for Gaethje taking that fight, but he took the fight last night, which
there's one big downfall of that. Did you happen to see Matias Gamrot's post-fight pictures that he was taking backstage?
No, is he hurt?
No, but he was taking a picture with his good friend and teammate, Dustin Poirier. So yeah, that's maybe going to be a little bit of a hiccup in the situation. Maybe. Yeah. They're both American top team lightweights who train together. So like that's probably a no go.
All right. Fine enough. You know what is a go? Champs. Champs is hosting a free March Madness bracket contest for a chance to win $1,000. Plus, if you host your own March Madness pool on Champs, you get an extra free entry. That's even better, guys. Extra free entry into the bracket contest. Tiebreakers are determined by who enters first. So make sure to register now so you don't miss out. Head to sportsgamblingpodcast.com/champs. That's sportsgamblingpodcast.com/champs. We have merch madness, MERCH madness going on right now.
I don't even have a graphic for this.
Okay, that's even better than 15% off everything in the merch store. Promo code madness. All right. Get gear like this hat I'm wearing. Gumby, is your top an SGP top?
Nope.
You're wearing right now. No, too bad. Anyhow, you want to be cool like us and dress like us and merch madness, promo code madness. All right. Michael Page, Kevin Holland, fun entrances, pretty fun fight. Page did not put his foot on the gas. He did a Kevin Holland and was clowning and joking around while Kevin Holland was being serious and getting his face busted up. And, sadly, Michael Page won a decision. We wanted him to win via knockout any second that could have happened. Any one of those punches, like, oh, this is it. But no, 29-28 across the board. Pages, his wrestling defense, pretty good. He did get taken down a few times, but he got himself up right away. Apparently, Kevin Holland is a black belt, Dan. Don't you know? Not just in Kung Fu, but in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. The most important thing, though, is we had MVP plus 114.
Not all black belts are created equal, first of all.
That's you don't
really,
say.
That's really important to know. And then second of all, I don't know that I think MVP is good with his wrestling defense. I think being taken down by Kevin Holland is a bad sign when you fight in the same division as Sean Brady.
Don't match him up with him.
I mean, yeah, you're right. And that's kind of where I'm at with MVP. It sort of depends on what he wants to do with his career, right? Because at 35, just signing with the UFC, maybe he doesn't have title shot aspirations. Maybe he's just here to get the paychecks that he had wanted all along and wasn't really getting with Bellator. Maybe Bellator was, you know, underpaying him a little bit. You know, we obviously don't have the data for most of that, so we don't really know. But like, if he was being underpaid by Bellator all that time and is just coming over here for a few fun checks and getting to fight guys like Wonderboy, like, cool, just let him do that. But otherwise, the top of this division has a whole bunch of people who are exceptionally good at wrestling, right? Like, this is the division that happens to have maybe Kamaru Usman, depending on what he decides to do with his life. Shavkat Rachmanov is in this division. You know, Sean Brady, which I mentioned. Even guys like Neil Magny and you know, Jeff Neal. You know, like those guys can wrestle a little bit. And it would not surprise me to just see them bulldoze MVP. So, yeah, I picked MVP. He did exactly what I thought he was going to against Kevin Holland, who I don't rate too highly as a wrestler in jiu-jitsu. And at the same time, I don't think I walk out of this one. Yeah, black belt.
You're a purple belt. How dare you?
I don't think I Stop walk out of this one belt. Feeling any better about MVP.
No. Let's just put him in fun fights. All right. Yep. That's all the fans want. I
like him against Wonder Boy. Everybody's calling for it. He would.
Oh yeah, really it's the same fighter. It's Spider-Man meme.
Yep. Give me more of that.
And you were too complimentary to him. He's turning 37 in a couple weeks. So
he's
older than you thought. So there you go. Welterweight Jack Della Maddalena came through. Our lone boy who came through last night, our child, took care of Gilbert Burns. He knocked him out with a knee and elbows, 343 into the third round. Just vicious, finish for Jack Della. The ref wanted Gilbert Burns to die, but he didn't die. But yeah, he probably took a few too many shots that weren't quite necessary. Jack Della got the job done, biggest test he's had, got it done, survived Gilbert Burns on the ground. Gilbert Burns had him down a few times, survived that, and was too much on the feet.
Yeah, I like this way of getting back up. I will say, you know, being down 2-0 on two different judges' scorecards, it's kind of alarming because I don't know. I thought he won one of those rounds.
Yeah, I'm surprised to hear that.
Yeah, and, you know, so the optics of his fighting continues to possibly lose him rounds, which we said in the Basil Hafez fight, too. Remember, that one wound up weirdly being a split decision because one right. judge doesn't know how to score fights. But, like, he continues to kind of have weird optics in his fights. Also, did you hear who he called for immediately after the fight?
Yes. Another one of our boys. We don't really call him our boy, but he is Shavkat. He's our
boy. He called for Shavkat, and nobody's calling for Shavkat. And Shavkat responded on Twitter, or at least somebody who manages him or helps him manage his Twitter responded that they're in. So you know that would be a really fun fight down the road if that does happen, because I'm all here for Shavkat versus JDM.
Do we have to do that though? Can't we like?
I would rather
have them both take out an old guy.
Yeah, I would rather he fight Kamaru Usman. Give Shavkat Colby Covington and just sort of weed both of those guys out of the way. But you know that's not how it works. Colby Covington is not fighting Shavkat. No. Colby Covington is never fighting again. So I stop getting excited about potentially a young up-and-comer beating his ass.
Can we feed one of them to Machado Gary, or feed Gary to them more precisely?
I wouldn't mind that. I think he's kind of a step down still. Like I still think he needs to take a bigger step forward and fight some of these, you know, somebody of the same level as Gilbert Burns.
Yep. And then the opener we got wrong, sadly. Piotr Jan, I guess there's still a little bit of bite left in the dog. He took care of Song Yadong 29-28 across the board. This is the fight I seemed to pay the least attention to for some reason. I was distracted at the time. So we'll let Gumby break it down. Yan was a slight favorite for this fight.
No breakdown here. Piotr Jan gave up the first round, downloaded information, and did enough in the last two.
That's what I observed. So good. I didn't miss anything.
Time to move on to the next point. I don't really know what to say here. He's I don't hate a fight between him and Cheeto. Let's say that.
Sure. That'd be fun. Yeah, we both went 3-2 on the main card, but we hit Paige at +114. So that made things even better. One of our children that let us down was Jilton Almeida. He showed us last fight that he kind of showed us he might misbehave and let us down. And he definitely did here. Heavyweight fight against Curtis Blades. Played with his food too much, wrestled and didn't try to do damage. And Curtis Blades decided he had enough of that and did some damage. Knocked him out 36 seconds into the second round. This was basically Jilton versus Derek Lewis part one, except this time he got himself knocked out. He was wrestling.
So?
He was doing, Damian Maia. He wasn't trying to hurt his opponent.
I think that's probably being too harsh on him. I don't think he had options. Like, you know, like it's with Derek Lewis. You're right. He was trying to maintain position so that we never wound up in a striking match, because being in a striking match with Derek Lewis is a nightmare. That one, we can judge him for not going all out. He scored 9 takedowns in this one. And like not once really settled into position because he couldn't.
Yeah.
It's wrestling
on his back, but yeah.
Yeah, it's wrestling with Curtis Blades, and like the fact that he got him down and the fact that he didn't let off the gas too, right? Because to your point, when he fought Derek Lewis, could he have just continued to, you know, look for submissions or drop ground and pound and stuff like that? Yeah, but then he could have given up position. Here he wasn't worried about, you know, getting hit. He wasn't worried about other things. He was just like getting after it and trying to show people that he was the man. And ultimately, that's probably what got him caught. So I actually think he did a little bit of a 180 from his Derek Lewis game plan. And now we see maybe why he did that against Derek Lewis.
Gumby continues to contradict me and make me look bad on the show, but that's fine. Gumby's probably
right. My job,
right, here.
Right? It's my job.
Yep. So Curtis Blaydes is not dead yet, just like Dustin Poirier. We can't bury either of these gentlemen yet.
He's never going away. Curtis Blaydes is never going away.
How about Caitlin Sermonara? She hung in there, didn't get defeated, but this went the way we pretty much expected. Macy Barber didn't maybe she didn't bulldoze her as much as I thought she would, but she definitely used her physicality and just aggression to win this fight. Still, I don't know how good Macy Barber is at anything other than she's very aggressive and physical fighter. And that's all it took to win the fight. 30-27, 30-27, 29-28. Gumby's lock of the week.
Yeah. Gross. I'm actually a little bit further down on her wrestling after this one. It becomes more apparent that she sort of bullied Amanda Ribas with her physicality, and maybe the wrestling isn't actually there because it really didn't look all that good against Caitlin Sermonara. And she's still got the physicality. It'll put you up against the cage and hit you with some knees. She threw a lot of knees. Couldn't really finish much and didn't really get to all that great a position. So, props to her again for taking out a top five opponent. That's really big, but I'm interested to see what happens when she runs into somebody who can be as physical as she is, you know, like
who you matching up her with.
I said, I really want to see her fight Lauren Murphy. I think I said it after the Ribas fight. It is, if we're going to sort of have her clear out some of this talent at the top of the division, I think that's the right one. You know, like everybody was talking about, you know, the winner of Thoreau and Blanchfield. I still think the winner of that deserves a title shot, no matter how long this Ultimate Fighter stuff is holding this back. You could run her against those, but why? You know, like why not just have her fight Lauren Murphy and hype her up and then have two title chances waiting in the wings? So, I like her against Murphy.
May not be a lot to her game, but does she really need a lot to make it to the top at women's flyweight? Probably not. That's the thing. Well, she's near the top as it is.
To get to a title, to win a title fight or get to a title fight, yes. Because the top of this division is stacked with women who can do everything and who I think are absolute beasts at their best traits too, right? Like Thoreau is a beast kickboxer. Aaron Blanchfield is an absolutely amazing grappler. So like, you're right. To be in the top seven or eight in this division, yeah, she doesn't have to be like super good at anything, but like she's not going to crack that top tier unless she gets way better at something.
Yep. Very, very true. We kind of touched on this fight already. Gamrot beat Dos Anjos 29-28, 29-28, 30-27. I thought he gave up the first round, but and then took the last two, but one of the judges disagreed with that. But yeah, wrestling. RDA is still good, but wrestling won it for
him. He's old. Yeah, that's what he is.
He's still good for an old guy. Gamrot, not that young either. He's like your age, so he's old too. So
yeah.
I hit the next one. Gumby missed. Gumby took a swing on a big underdog and missed. Kyler Phillips came back, took care of Pedro Munoz, 30-27, 30-27, 30-27. I like how the announcers were basically, they made Matrix his last name or his first name. It was great. They were doing that with someone else to Venom Page, Michael Page. They kept calling him Venom. Like that's
At least that's a thing that he uses all the time.
Yeah. But anyhow, I'm like, did he change his last name to Matrix, or are they just saying that? But they were just saying it. Kyler Phillips looked pretty good here, right?
Yeah, he looked good. This is kind of my thing with him though, is that like he oscillates between being a guy who looks like a title challenger, which they kept hyping him up to be in this fight, and a guy who looks like he can barely beat Raleon Paiva. And like,
With that guy, didn't you diss him last episode?
I did.
You got something the same thing going on with that guy.
Cause I pitched him to beat Kyler Phillips in that fight, I think. with that being said, like, I just think Kyler Phillips needs consistency, but if he puts on these kind of performances every time against guys like Pedro Munoz, like, yeah, he's a legit dude in this division.
He took care of a young Punisher, for crying out loud. All right. So not so good on the prelim portion. What actually No, I did. I did all right. I went 3-1. Gummy went 2-2. All right. Early prelims. Early prelims were pretty fire emoji as well. Felipe Lenz took care of business for us. Yont Kutalaba changed his look. Threw me off there. But anyhow, still the same fighter. Lenz, 29-28 across the board. Looked really, really sharp here. We had him at plus 115. We thought he was good value for this fight. And he's undefeated at light heavyweight. Four straight wins in the UFC at light heavyweight.
Yeah. Do you mean by change his looks that he washed off the green stuff from the weigh-ins?
Yes. No, it's just I don't remember his hair being that short and with like a bigger goatee. That's all.
Yeah. Okay. But yeah. I will also say he mixed up his looks a little bit when he didn't come out like guns blazing like
right.
I thought he was going to. He came out a little bit more composed, which is probably smart against Felipe Lenz. We said that would be sort of the bane of his fighting if he was going to do that, because Lenz is good for 15 minutes. And it just still didn't save him. Lynn still hit him a bunch and still had better cardio and still looked better late in the fight. So, Felipe Lenz, dude, might actually be a problem at 205.
Yeah, I was going to say, what are we thinking about him now? 205 is not a very deep division. And
no, he would be good. He would beat a lot of guys in this division just by being really technically proficient.
Yeah,
sure. Like, I don't know. Yeah, you know, I'm trying to think of the bottom of 205, but like, because I don't have the rankings in front of me.
It's right OSP now, like, fight week. Dredney, let everyone know. OSP.
Thank God. No, he's better than that. I would say, like, yeah, you like pair him with like a Dustin Jacoby or a Ryan Spann. And like, I don't know, man. Yeah. He could probably beat those guys.
Yeah. Did he used to be a chunky guy? Because he's really
good shape now. He was a big heavyweight. Yeah, he was a big old heavyweight.
Yeah.
No, now he's buff. Yeah, he's buff now.
Buff. He is buff, and he looked very good in the cage. You know, he's got one of those all around games. He's pretty much good everywhere.
He's technically proficient at literally everything. And at light heavyweight, that's the scariest thing in the world to these guys.
No kidding. Knows what he's doing. All right. You know, another place that knows what they're doing is Hall of Fame Bets. You win bigger by betting smarter this NBA season with Hall of Fame Bets, the sports betting analytics platform for parlays, player props, and game lines. Research every NBA and soccer bet with historical stats and data. And turn any parlay idea into Hall of Fame Bets, revolutionary parlay optimizer tool to get hit rates broken down by leg, as well as an expected probability for the entire parlay. Sort all players by hit rate for any bet to learn which players are hot and which picks have value. Stop betting in the dark and join over 30,000 users researching with Hall of Fame Bets to craft more intelligent, data-driven parlays. Download the Hall of Fame Bets app or visit HOFBets.com and use code SGPN to get 50% off your first month today. Start researching, start winning with Hall of Fame Bets. All right, we did the research. We did the winning. This fight, my lock of the week, came through Michelle Paheya. Schooled Michael Olasechuk. Ended up submitting him, which is what we wanted. Rear naked choke, 101 into the first round. A lot of ones there. Yeah, we thought Pereira was a steal at minus 148, and he proved that. There's levels here is what I was thinking when I was watching this, and he is just more than one level, a couple levels above Olasechuk.
Yeah, first of all, I was on VSiN Live with the bosses this
week. Really? Oh, yeah. Nice.
And I told them Michelle Pereira ladder play, get him by money line, get him by inside the distance, get him by submission. And he did all of that. So, I get to brag about this one twice.
Yeah, no kidding.
Sick. And, I'm going to say this, like, people keep talking about how his cardio sucks because they remember that one Tristan Connolly fight where he came out breakdancing and looked like crap after being wrestled for a minute. But now he's at middleweight, first of all. So like, that's not the same. He was a huge welterweight. Now he cuts a little bit less weight. And in addition to that, that's literally the only time in his career where we've seen his cardio kind of fail him. You know, like even if you want to go back to his fights, was it in Japan he was doing the moonsaults and stuff like that?
Probably. That sounds like something that would happen in Japan, right?
Yeah, it just feels that way. And he never had any cardio issues back then. So, like, I think it's time to stop using that as the narrative for Michelle Pereira. Now, obviously, maybe this fight isn't the best example. He won in a minute. But, like, I really do think he's dangerous at 85. Like, I think he'd beat I think he'd beat a ton of these ranked dudes at 85 right now.
I was going to say, he should be ranked or close to it by now.
Yeah, I haven't filled up my rankings yet for this week. But he's probably in there at 85. You would have to imagine. So, like, would he be Anthony Hernandez?
Yeah, sure.
Would he beat Jack Manson? I'd probably beat him. I'd take him over Jack Hermanson.
Maybe at this point you would, possibly, yeah.
Yeah, because Jack Hermanson does that, like, you know, like, wily veteran game, but I don't know if that works against, like, an absolutely madman.
Yeah, and he's a little less of a madman, but in a good way, not in the Johnny Walker way where he's, like,
still
not effective.
Explosive. It's still explosive, yes. Is what it
yeah.
is. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's spurts still... of madness.
Spurts of, oh, there's a title for us. I can't remember. It was going to be the guy from Home Alone 2, but that's even better.
Spurts of madness.
Of madness. So I don't want to, all right, perfect, perfect, perfect. All right, so we had Pereira. We had the next man too, Despaigne. We didn't learn anything from him. Well, I guess we learned he can beat UFC, quote unquote, UFC level talent. He took care of Josh Parisian. TKO punches 18 seconds into the fight. Robles Despaigne is who I'm talking about. This was what he was hyped up for. This is what he was signed for, and he came through. He could be, even if he's ends up not being good, he's going to be fun.
Yep. I think the only thing we learned is that his knockout power does not diminish as he's falling down.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. He was falling backwards and it was kind of like, that was like Anderson Silva-esque where he, like what he did to Forrest Griffin.
Yeah.
You know,
if you look at
one of him as you're falling away,
if you look at one of the punches that he lands, like the most devastating one, the one that sat down Parisian, I'm pretty sure neither of his feet are on the ground when he lands the punch.
Who needs feet in the ground?
Which is just such an insane thing to say about the power this man generates. He's walking backwards, his feet are off the ground, and he still landed a blow that concusses a 265-pound man. Like, this guy, man, he's going to be explosive. What his ceiling yeah. is, God, I don't know.
That's what I was going to ask you. I guess we have not really learned anything.
There's no
that's
way to know. He could be
that's the best fighter he's fought, though, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That was the best
he could
fighter
be awful at takedown defense and be the type of person who loses to Dontayle Mays. And yeah. he could also beat Surreal Gain tomorrow, maybe. Like, yeah. who knows? You know, like, we don't know what he's at.
Yeah, who's to say he's we're ever going to find out? He might just keep knocking suckers out. No one will ever test his takedown defense. CJ Vergara tested the scale and lost before this fight. He came in at 127 for a 125-pound fight. That's multiple times he's missed weight. And then he got totally schooled, as we hoped and expected, from Asu Almabayev, 30-27 across the board. Almabayev, like I said, he's good. He's got power on the feet, but obviously it was his name ends in V. So it's the grappling that brought him to the dance, and that's what he relied on here.
Yeah, I actually think Vergara looked a little bit better on the feet than mm-hmm. I thought he would. And had he not missed weight for his third time in the UFC, that kind of performance might have earned him an extra fight, but I think he gets the big ugly axe because the weight misses. Like, you just can't be doing it that many times, man. Because then they're going to force you to go up in weight class, and you sort of have to earn that by being fun enough or exciting enough. And I don't know that he showed that. So it's unfortunate, but that's kind of how the game works.
All right, on the winner's side, do we have ourselves another up-and-comer? At flyweight, do you think there's any
way? I would have liked to see him get hit by CJ Vergara less. You know, that's kind of alarming. I kind of think of him. We'll say, you know, like we've got these tiers of like young fun prospects, right? Where like Mokaev and Ursig have kind of ascended to the real deal top of the division, and you got Tetsuya Taira kind of like a step below that, right?
You have Ursig above Taira?
I do. Yeah, dude, Ursig cracks, man. Like. And don't get me wrong, Tyra's jiu-jitsu is really fun. Tetsuya Taira ain't standing with Ursig. And so, yeah, like I have Taira as kind of a rung below. And some of that, too, is just that they brought up Taira slower. They didn't feed him to a top 10 opponent in his first fight in the UFC like they did Ursig, right? Ursig got David Dvorak right out the gate. So I kind of think Taira is like a step behind those two. And I kind of think Almabayev is like one step behind that. He's like in the Joshua Van rung of guys where like, okay, you put some pretty good performances on and now we're actually going to have to see you fight a guy.
Yeah. He's only had what, two fights in the UFC. So
yeah. Same with Van.
Yep. Yep. We don't need to rush these guys. Cause there is plenty. There's plenty to like at flyweight right now for sure. In terms of up and comers, I did not like the first fight. The right person won though. It wasn't a split decision. Well, I'm one person. If I had split personalities, it would be a split decision in my mind, but not surprised. I'm not really surprised it ended up a split close fight, but I think the right person won. Joanne Calderwood would won her quote unquote retirement fight. See, it's not fair for people who really are retiring, which seems I would guess she probably really is retiring. because everyone's in MMA has ruined the retirement word. But anyhow, she went away victorious against Marina Moroz. 28-29, 29-28, 29-28. Gumby, this was his big hit on the night. This is what put him more in profit than I was again this week, despite us 2 weeks in a row, we've hit the same amount of fights, but Gumby has won more money and he had her at plus 200, a big plus 200 looked, hit for you, Gumb.
Yep. She didn't look real great out of the gate. I definitely gave Moroz the first, but she clearly won the second and the third to me.
Yeah, I think so.
Kind of weird move out of Florida. They had some judges I had never heard of before. The judge who scored this one for Joanne Wood was named Jason Grenier. Who I had never heard of. So like, I kind of like
newer. Maybe it's Grenier.
Maybe it's Grenier. But hey, here's a fun little Grenier fact too. Guess who scored this fight for Marina Moroz?
Which one should I guess? I'll guess Sherdog.
And
or maybe not Cage, not Cage Side Press. That's the one that you're with, right?
Yeah, that's what I do work for.
Another Cage one.
No, Combat Press.
Combat Press, right? Press is the word that's the same.
Yeah. One guy from Sherdog and Combat Press both had the fight from Rose, and then some other one from an outlet I had never heard of before. But like the only three people scored it from Rose. Well, some people weirdly added a draw, but three people scored it from Rose, and it was those two outlets again. Like, it's just they don't know how to score a fight.
How do you get a draw? You give Rose the first two, and you give.
I think I saw
was it the third that Rose was almost knocked out. It was.
I don't know. It's Jed Minshew who gave it a draw, and it looks like he gave a 10-10 round in one. Oh, no, it was a 10-8 round. I don't know how he...
The last round, probably, I would guess.
I don't know. There was no 10-8 in there. He's an idiot. No. He also is pretty bad at scoring fights.
Boy, harsh. Gumby's throwing shade on people. All right, so that concluded... Well, that actually started the evening. That concludes our recap of it. We both went 10-4, which was pretty good. So we're both 17-8 over the last 2 weeks, which is pretty good. Based off $100 on every fight, I was up 181. Gumby's up $334. So we're both identical records, 58% hit rate on the year. So we're getting up to that 60% rate, which is the minimum I want to be at. But Gumby's only down 3% and I'm down 8%. We both hit our locks, Barber and Paella. Gumby whiffed on Almeida, a coward pick, plus 100. I hit on Page, plus 114.
Oh, yeah, big, plus 114.
14% higher. Gumby, as he mentioned, had the main under 4.5. I had Almabaya via submission, which did not hit as well. Vergara was pretty good at keeping himself safe on the ground. Half of the Hungry Man Jong hit, Paella via submission, probably the most difficult half of the two. And then Page did not knock out Kevin Holland like we were hoping. So, we did very good with the picks. We even hit some dogs, which was nice to hear. As for the actual bonuses in the real world, Poirier, BSD was fight of the night. Then all the finishes got performance bonuses. Sean O'Malley, Jack Della Maddalena, Curtis Blades, Michelle. I sound like someone else. Michelle Paella, Robles Despagne. So apparently Dana White's trying to impress the guy from Home Alone by giving out money.
Either that or they made $14 million in the game.
Yeah, that's true.
Maybe that could afford an extra 150K I could give out.
Maybe. But the UFC doesn't sleep, Gumby. It keeps rolling on, and we're back to the apex.
It's a sick fight card.
Yeah. Well, it's a heavyweight main event, but at least these guys are kind of higher up in the rankings. It's Tai Tuivasa versus Marcin Tybura. Better than most of the middleweight type fights we get, or better than the fight night we had a couple weeks ago. Brian Battle, we like him. Anj Lusa, Ovince St. Preux, Bing Yeehaw, back down at light heavyweight. Kennedy Enzachukwu, Christian Rodriguez, Isaac Dalgarian, Penny Kianzad, Macy Chasson, Gerald Mearshart, Brian Barbarena. Two of your favorites, right, Gumby? Gumby.
I do love both those guys. Yeah.
Natan Levy, Mike Davis, Josie Nunes, Chelsea Chandler, Jafel Filo, Ode Osborne, Joshua Kulabao, Danny Silva, Corey McKenna, Jacqueline Amarim. Something's going on weird with her odds, I heard. Maybe Gumby can explain. Then Charlampos, Gregorio, who was on Gumby's show last week versus Chad and Helliger. And I think we have Tiago Moises, Mitch Ramirez, who has a serial killer name.
Yeah.
I hope his nickname's that too, isn't it?
The Fight Stalker.
Right.
Yeah, the fight
Something's going on with the line, right? For our girl Jackie Amarin's fight.
Yeah, the money has just clearly come in on Corey McKenna. I'm not sure what, or maybe just like sometimes it's just one book took a big bet somewhere on Corey McKenna. I don't know why Corey McKenna is inspiring confidence, but also like all of these fights for the most part have like razor close odds. It's literally the opposite of so obviously this past Saturday there were a couple of like close ones, but the week before, remember, it was like all blowout odds everywhere. As far as the eye could see, this is the exact opposite. It's like everything is like minus 145, minus 155, minus 170. It's like all pretty close, which makes making picks a lot more fun and means there's value pretty much all the time everywhere.
And a better heavyweight matchup too. So yeah, it's pretty much well, actually, not pretty much. It is a much better card than the one that we saw 2 weeks ago. It doesn't matter to us. We will watch it. We will discuss it in our Discord. We will bet on it. We will do all that fun stuff. So we'll be back on Wednesday and Thursday with those. But first, of course, we have a regional MMA episode coming up tomorrow, Monday, this week. What are we covering this week, Gumby?
We're going to talk about Cage Warriors, and they've got two shows going on this week. So we're going to talk about Cage Warriors 167. We're going to cover the top two fights off of that card on Monday. And then we'll follow that up with breaking down Cage Warriors 168 on the same episode. We picked handpicked three fights off of that show to break down. So we're going to give you five fights like always, and it'll all be Cage Warriors action from Friday and Saturday.
There you go. Cage Warriors always, well, pretty much always comes through. Good promotion. All right. In the meantime, Discord, sportsgamblingpodcast.com/Discord. Twitter is SGPNMMA, at Gumby Vreeland, at Jeff Fox Writer. I'm the same on Instagram. Get into my Substack, enter my weekly UFC Pick'em for free. It's moneymma.substack.com. Thank you for everyone who already has subscribed there. Listen to Gumby every week at the Top Turtle MMA podcast. It's got darn good interviews, and he gives you some picks too, but he just repeats what he says on our show. So it's pretty much the same. So that's why I know sometimes which way he's going to go on a play. I'm kidding. Listen to the show. It's different banner. It's a different co-host. So what else should you do? Oh, YouTube. We haven't really plugged that too much. YouTube is still growing. Thank you, everyone who has subscribed. If you haven't subscribed yet, smash that subscribe button. Like our videos. You can chat with us on the videos there. We always get back to comments, assuming it's a intelligent comment. So make sure you subscribe to Sports Gambling Podcast. All of our podcasts are on YouTube, but obviously we are MMA Gambling Podcast. And then sportsgamblingpodcast.com, sportsgamblingpodcast.com/Patreon, sportsgamblingpodcast.com/store. So you can get cool swag and look like Gumby and myself. All right. We'll be back tomorrow. We'll be Zulfikar, Jeff Fox, and JoJo Gumby Vreeland, and we will talk to you then. Bye.